It's time for Mac Break Weekly. It's going to be an interesting show. There's not a lot of Mac news. Well, there's one Mac story. Mostly we'll be talking about Apple. Have they lost the war of words against Samsung? It's coming up next with Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 342, recorded March 19th, 2013. Rib iPhone. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW, and we'll give you $10 off at checkout. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit Audible.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK3. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh and Apple news every week. So that's why we call it Mac Break Weekly. Here he is, Andy Yannacco of the Chicago Sun-Times and The Verge. I saw you 60 minutes, 60 seconds on The Verge.
90 seconds.
90, so whatever.
They added an extra 30 seconds.
They gave you
too
more
much information.
So was that just a one-time deal, or are you the new host? What's going on?
I stopped by to visit their new offices and soil their beanbag chairs, which are comfortable and lovely. I had the company seltzer. We might be doing some things in the future.
Wow.
Much more I can't say, but it was
a great bunch of guys.
It was like it's so impressive to see like a company that's like still building out, still like on the way up, still moving in, where you see just everybody working, everybody frenetic, all kinds of equipment that is being put to use. And it's not yet at the point where people are just sort of wondering, oh, how much work do I have to do before I can go to the break room and have another free bag of peanuts? It's just I also visited Comixology, which is in the exact same process right now.
The font place that you love so very much.
Oh no, they're the iTunes of digital comics.
That's right.
And so they're also in the process of like they moved to a bigger office last year. They're moving into another bigger office soon, and it's like okay, so this is what excitement and development looks like. This is good.
Yeah, you should come out to visit TWiT sometime. Also here, and he's not going anywhere because he's snowed in Montreal, Rene Ritchie from iMore.com. You took off your snowsuit. He was all bundled up when he joined us.
I was being made fun of, so I relented to peer pressure. We're snowed in. That almost never happens. Montreal State is famous for staying open no matter what, but apparently buses were getting stuck and trucks couldn't get up hills. So the schools have closed. Everything is closed, and we may never make it out alive.
Yikes. Yipes.
Snowpocalypse.
God, yeah, but you wouldn't think Montreal would ever have trouble with snow.
I mean, they have the trucks out, but it's still snowing, and it's supposed to snow for a couple of days. So you have the threat of the giant plows, and I unfortunately was in front of the plow, not behind it. That's not where you want to be.
It's got to be us. And also, it's good to have you. I'm glad you made it. I guess, really, with Skype, you can't leave. So really, this is the only place you could be.
Absolutely.
It's not so hard to get here via Skype. But look who is here, Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. I always make a big deal when you're here. And you've been here a lot lately, so I should stop making such a big deal.
Well, you know, I'll just go back into the travel schedule sometime.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm trying to – we actually are adding more people to the Pixel Corps, and I'm able to not be everywhere.
Yay!
All the time, so
well,
I'm working
we love
on
having you here.
Slow progress.
Big story, breaking news, 10.8.3 is out.
Crowd goes
Chad doesn't know because he
crazy.
Hides updates.
I actually updated my computer yesterday.
Okay, all right. Apple buries the lead, by the way, on this one. The 10.83 update recommended for all Mountain Lion users includes features and fixes that improve the stability, blah, blah, blah. The number one item Apple says 10.83 does is the ability to redeem iTunes gift cards in the Mac App Store using your Mac's built-in camera. Then boot camp support for Windows 8. I guess taking pictures.
It's actually kind
of
cool.
Of gift cards with your camera is a cool feature.
Yeah.
One is fun, one is work.
It's a good. I guess it should be in the operating system.
Here's the thing: I think more people will use that than the boot camp.
Yeah, you're probably right. Also, boot camp support for Macs with a 3 terabyte hard drive. I'm guessing that means your Fusion, we Fusion users can use it, but I'll have to check. A fix for an issue that could cause a file URL to quit apps unexpectedly. That might have been the number one feature. That was the file colon triple
that was
slash.
Great. That was awesome.
So they fixed that. Logic Pro fix. Stuttering audio on 2011 iMacs and an update to Safari. As usual, they kind of don't mention the security updates, but I would guess there's a few security updates built into this one. Anyway, just a word of warning, a note you might want to. I'm going to update now, even though it's going to require a restart. Let's see here. Let's see what else is going on. Oh, you know, maybe we should. I think we'll save this Apple losing the war of words. Very interesting couple of articles this week from Jean-Louis Gasset in his Monday note yesterday. John Gruber a couple of days earlier. The perception, especially with the Galaxy S4 event on Thursday, as weird as it was, and it truly was. Did you went to that, Andy? Right?
Yeah, it was just I'll put it this way. While I was waiting in line for around the first hour, someone replied to me on Twitter correcting me for misspelling a. I said that I described it as a fuster cluck, and they corrected my spelling. So thank you very much for that.
Hey, but you know who took advantage of the fuster cluck? HTC. Apparently, they were going around giving.
Yeah.
Did you try the one?
They had water. They had a little like snack sized Pringles.
That's so good. I love that.
They're going through the line with HTC ones to show because they knew that everybody is in line. You know, everybody is in the tech press there. On top of everything else, it wasn't terribly well organized like an Apple event is, where you know that at some point here's where you stand in line. Here's how what time you get in. Here's where and you're going to get a seat when you get in. This was. Showing up, like for, in my case, showing up an hour before the doors open, being told to stand over there, 35 at the end of a long, long line. 35 minutes later, being told, "Oh, you're in the wrong line. Oh. Stand at this, the end of this line over there."
Oh.
Walk, 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 and then other. Oh, gosh.
Oh.
Meanwhile, this is at Radio City Music Hall. By my estimate, the maximum capacity of Radio City Music Hall is 6,000. They had the entire orchestra section full, and I think part of the mezzanine. So. At least 1,000 people. I'm going to guess closer to 1,500 to 1,750. So this was not exactly a laser-focused event designed to deliver technical information to extremely savvy business and technology reporters. It was a very big tent, and so therefore they gave us a stage show with actors and dancers and lots of odd things that didn't really – never once showed us anything actually working. That was the most amazing thing. It was nothing. Every time they'd show off a feature, it would be, again, the actors showing off how people would conceivably use that feature in the real world. And then on the big Jumbotron screens, here is a screen image that is a static image of like a PR image of what that feature looks like on the screen. And honestly, the only thing that was really of use to a tech reporter was at the very, 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 very end when like they said goodbye and said, this is the demo area is now open. And then on the big Jumbotrons, they had spec sheets. And that's when we found out, okay, so it runs Android 4.2.2. Mm. It has these... It was just...
And you could have done that in 5 seconds. In fact, they could have put it outside in the line, given you a piece of paper, and you could have gone home.
Yeah,
but you would have missed the 50s housewives ogling the pool boy and why their nails dry. And that, I think, was worth the price of admission alone.
That was terrible. To be honest, I was so busy taking notes, and because I don't, my radar is insufficiently tuned into sort of stuff, I did see that it was weird and silly. I didn't really, until I watched the video later on, notice that, oh my goodness, they really wanted to do it that way.
Yeah.
So it was really quite tone deaf. I mean, I just remember thinking that if I had flown out to the opposite coast and spent all that money
pissed?
For this,
I would
steam.
In Samsung's defense, though, I mean, they had press briefings in the morning. They did the one-on-one briefings where the press went in and they let them do hands-on on the devices, and they sent out press releases earlier with all the features. So this was entirely a show.
But who was it for?
Yeah, because I mean, the journalists who cover Android day in and day out had all their stuff they needed. They could have left at lunchtime. There was no need for the event. Right. And then they also had Times Square showing the live feed, plus with dancers, jugglers. I think the Justin Timberlake dancers.
Yeah, it looked really cold.
And I don't mean to speak selfishly. I mean, I go to these events. There are times when I get the one-on-one. There are times when I don't get the one-on-one. Even when I don't get the one-on-one, I don't get, oh, here's a little Broadway show we're going to give you because you're stupid and we don't really think you're going to be riding this seriously. I mean, and the people in line with me, a lot of them, as far as I can tell, most of the people who got like the substantive briefing were the people who are in the direct Android press. But I was with people who have like 20 years experience in tech journalism and are now like, you know, executives in major name brand, like online and print news outlets with reaches that reaches into the millions per month. And they were cooling their heels for an hour and a half and they got an hour long dog and pony show. They did get we did get a sack lunch at the end of it.
How was that lunch? Nice. Was that good?
I had the steak, so it was like sort of a steak salad, a brownie, a cookie with the Samsung logo on it, and a 64 gigabyte SD card.
Oh, well, that's not bad. I take that.
Which wasn't bad. Like upon exit, there was
not
like,
to, does it say not to be taken internally? I mean, do you think some of the hungry press might have eaten it?
We know that you're silly, and you probably think this is paste and therefore edible, but we're telling you, please don't
eat the card. So, all I can think as I'm watching it is Apple would have – I would just – Apple, because really, Apple is kind of the brand name for this kind of event. And I kept thinking, oh my God, Apple would never do anything.
Well, I think that sometimes sometimes people will say that you're either your parents or you're not your parents. You know, and in this case, I think a lot of people have gone towards being like Apple for a long time.
And Samsung consciously did the opposite.
Let's try to do something that is not. We're going to do something that's better than what Apple does. We're going to make it.
Anyway,
you know, it was definitely different. I mean, it was definitely imaginative.
Yeah,
it was a cry for attention.
It's funny because Samsung
we
copies,
are talking about it.
Samsung copies so much Apple does, even down to now. You know how Apple made everything the I. Mm-hmm. Samsung everything's the S.
Right,
and so this is like a direct. It's like such a copy. So why not just copy everything? Why pick this one fairly important thing to be contrarian on? It didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work. I mean,
the saddest thing is they have a lot of really smart people at Samsung who seem to know before the show went on that this was completely the wrong thing.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's Samsung executives not listening or if there's some sort of transatlantic problem. But
was there a message like a drumbeat that you heard before the show that this is the wrong thing?
I was in the same line as Andy, and as much as there was HTC executives sneaking around there, there was a lot of Samsung people around there.
We're so sorry for what you're about to see.
It didn't look like they were happy.
Oh dear.
And it was like a 50s musical that was really mistimed and misdirected. And they had smart people. Ryan Biden, the head of product marketing for Samsung, was there with the actor doing the presentation. And Ryan is phenomenal. He did the playbook for BlackBerry previously. Very good at explaining that stuff, but he's being surrounded by skits.
Right.
And they broke the fourth wall. So they kept telling you, this is our fake family is doing this now. But it was a completely mistimed wink and nudge.
Yeah, well, there was an awful lot of it. I like a little wink and nudge, but it was like a nonstop wink and nudge. He's not really Chinese. Look, see, he's speaking English now. Why, you were Veronica earlier, now you're Madge. It was just like...
Even the phone decisions are odd. Like, Samsung still uses the cheaper feeling plan. After you hold an
That was a disappointment to me.
iPhone,
yeah.
They're deliberate about it. They seem to think that appeals to the demographic that they want to go through. They use two different chipsets instead of one because, you know, carriers have to approve chipsets. So it's an interesting phone. I think it's a miracle of engineering that they could put a 5-inch 1080p display in a casing as small as the Galaxy S3. But a lot of it seemed just unfocused. And I think that's the challenge that they have, is to sort of stop throwing things against the wall and pick their battles better.
This isn't the Samsung show, but I think it's appropriate to talk a little bit about the S4 because when we come back and talk about the iPhone 5S, Phil Schiller was giving interviews the day before, clearly defensive interviews.
If Phil can talk about it, we can.
Yeah. So, which is something rarely done at Apple, I think.
I mean, I think that they are starting to distinguish themselves. But while Samsung might have copied Apple in the early days, I think that Samsung is definitely going after saying yes to everything. You know, we wanted to have the highest resolution and we want to be fastest. And Apple is known for saying no to lots of things, you know, and And I think you're gonna find that I think that Samsung phones are gonna have, you know, faster processors and bigger screens, and they are gonna be more complex. You know, and I think that, you know, there's a certain population that wants that. I'm gonna probably have one. You know,
well, it's interesting because
I don't
know
if it'll be my day to day. I mean, you know, that's my issue.
The response to Retina display is Retina Plus. I mean, 1920x1080 on a 5-inch display is mind-boggling.
Like, yeah, 400-something PPI. But looking at it in person, it certainly looked wonderful. And when you display a web page and you sort of scroll it down, so you see the whole width of like a desktop screen page inside there. I feel as though I could see more detail in there than before, but realize that when the first time that people started shipping these Retina displays, they're telling you that this is actually higher than the human eye can perceive. So it seems as though you have to really sell the point of no, we promise you that there is more detail and does improve the experience, because otherwise you're just making the device more expensive and you're burning out battery life much more quickly. So
yeah, and require much higher CPU power to push all those pixels too.
Yeah.
This phone OLED, is twice as fast as the iPhone 5, according to Geekbench.
Yeah, it's also still OLED, which is, I think, pure stubbornness at this point.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's I know Tim Cook said it, and it's in vogue for Apple people to say it. But independent people who are very good at measuring screens are saying OLED is not a great technology. They oversaturated, try and overcome the problems with the blue color, and at the end of the day, just doesn't make as good a picture as the LCD that Apple and HTC and others.
You're going to have a hard time convincing consumers of that. And for the same reason that they buy TVs and leave them for on the dynamic display setting that was at the Kmart, people like bright, saturated colors. Also, you're going to have a hard time convincing them.
It's
not accurate. Who cares? Also, it looks gorgeous.
Also, there's a point to be made that there's a difference between the correct saturation level for a TV, where it's always showing nothing but real people and real events and real things, whereas a phone is mostly going to be showing a user interface. So if that is a conscious decision, I don't really think it is, that making brighter, sharper, more saturated colors is going to be making applications look more pleasing. That is an argument that can be made. But I agree with Renee. The biggest disadvantage of OLED is that in bright sunlight, the iPhone 5 works great in bright sunlight on an OLED display. You really do need to crank up the brightness so you can still maintain readability. What really surprised me, though, is that they're going for a 13 megapixel camera.
Yeah, that surprised me.
13 megapixel camera when everybody
is HTC's 4.
Yeah, versus 4, exactly.
Every other manufacturer is saying, we're going to give you fewer megapixels, but we're going to make sure we explain to you that this will result in better pictures. And of course, they didn't. Renee, did they actually release any photos from that camera? Because I couldn't find any.
No, nor have the units gone out to let people test them yet. So
yeah, so I'm so completely skeptical that this will in any way be an upgrade over the previous the camera. I believe. I mean, I'm sort of suspicious that it's going to be worse than any other camera, because great, more megapixel, but probably more noise, probably less.
Smaller microns.
If you put them in front of a focus chart well lit, I think you'll probably find that it is sharper. You know, but if you look at
well
it in
lit,
real world,
well lit being the underscored.
Yeah,
phrase
right.
There.
Exactly, because it'll be But the problem is as soon as you put it in a real world setting, you're going to find that it's much grainier. I'm quite happy with a 6-megapixel camera that was really good in low light, which I don't think any of these phone cameras are.
Well, how is it Apple? I would say Apple, and tell me if I'm wrong, but the iPhone still is the best camera phone on the market, right? I mean, not even close.
Yeah.
And it's using, as I understand, the same Sony sensor as the Galaxy S3. So what is, Apple must, it must be software. It must be software.
I'm not sure.
Software could be lenses, could be
glass. Could be other
purple
stuff.
The purple glass.
Yeah. Yeah, the camera with which they put it.
There's
together.
Some secret sauce that nobody. Why has nobody been able to duplicate this? Certainly,
some cameras are better at individual aspects, like the optical image stabilization might help in low light.
Low
but I think
light
overall. Andy's exactly right that
the Lumia 920
low light.
The Lumia is great in low light.
The Lumia 920 absolutely humiliates the iPhone in low light.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close.
I agree.
It's just absolute humiliation. But as we say, when you take those numbers off the image sensor, what do you do with them next? What frustrates me about that camera when I was testing it was that if you give it even just an average scene with perfectly good lighting, I mean, nothing particularly great, nothing particularly bad about it, it's like, why is there so much noise in the branches of those trees? Why is the color of the sky just a little bit off? And you know that you just get the impression that this camera is one software update away from being the best camera phone on the entire market, but it's just not there yet.
Let me posit this, and you guys tell me if I'm right or wrong. And it seemed to me from the presentation that Samsung has decided it's going to become the phone of the people and is willing to cede something that Apple has historically had, which is the phone for, you know, the smart people, the people who really are, you know, care and are willing to, you know, I don't know. How do you describe
that?
It
was the oddest term, Leo. They had, when the poster came up, J.K. Shin was there to introduce the phone, the president of Samsung, and it was called a lifestyle companion.
Yeah, that's their new tag phrase. Yeah.
Most of us in the media, because it's really an empty term. It doesn't really mean anything. And yes, they had health features. Yes, they had, you know, and Samsung's an interesting company. They make scales. They make bands. Right. They can do all these great things. But lifestyle companion didn't really mean anything. It was almost a symbol of trying to be good at a lot of things, but great at
none. I'll tell you what it means, and I'll tell you where they're going with that. They're saying you don't need a computer. For instance, all of the camera they have so much Samsung crap software on this thing. This thing, and most of the presentation was not about the phone at all, but about the crap software Samsung was putting on it. Things like it scrolls as you look up, and you know, follows your eyes, and picture in picture, so that the forward facing camera takes a picture of you while you're taking a picture of your kids, so you can. For the truly narcissistic, you can see your reaction to the kids tap dancing.
7. All of this, surround. Well, see,
that's but to me it seems like Samsung is trying to do everything you would do in a computer. You don't need a computer. This is your companion. This is your lifestyle companion. This is everything you need to do for your busy, active life. No,
I think it was just empty marketing. You need to have a phrase up there that gives the impression that this is a very coherent, tied together device, even though it really wasn't.
Well, and I think.
What surprised me the most is that I could really see how they could have showed off some of these features to make them look really, really good. Like it has actual motion sensors on the front of the device, and they're using it to say, oh, look, you can turn pages just by waving your hand in front of it, which is a silly way to demonstrate that. The great way to demonstrate that is that it doesn't matter if it's, you know, if you happen to be in a landlocked, snowbound Canadian city and you're wearing thick ski gloves standing outside, you will still be able to scroll through the book that you're reading. That's a good feature, but no, they have to say, "Oh, look, I can wear it with my God. I don't want to touch my screen because my nails are still wet."
I'm holding a drink.
Huge problem.
But answer my question: Isn't Samsung going after
normal
people and saying, "Okay, Apple, you're happy to," and this is going to lead into this conversation about the war of worlds. We're happy for you to take the high end.
Well, I think the kind of marketing that I saw in that area, or that hyperbole, is I find more common when I was working in Japan. It's much more common.
It's an Asian
technology
thing.
Being part of your life is much more accepted.
Well, because many Japanese don't have, there's no room in their, I'm told, in their apartments for a desktop computer, that their phone is so complex that it is their computer.
Like what phones do in Japan anyway is outrageous. You know, and people really do most of their communication. I mean,
that may be a stereotype, but that's what I've heard. So
no, even this was years ago before really, you know, when the iPhone was first coming out when I was there, and even then the phones were pretty advanced. And so people really do, you know, spend a lot of time there, more than probably, I couldn't say more than Americans now. I mean, now that we, you know, with the smartphone revolution. But I think that, I still think that what you're looking at is, I mean, I think Android has always been going this direction. And I think that Samsung is running this direction, which is the, you know, if you're really looking for the fastest, cheaper, you know, the biggest feature set, the lowest price, those two areas, I think that is something that Samsung and Android are going to always.
And Apple doesn't care about.
I think Apple is looking for, I mean, I still think it's always, I think Apple's going to argue that it's not just the high end, it's the people who just want it to work.
Right.
Like they don't want to know about it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want it to be complicated. They just.
Well,
like,
Samsung cleverly positioned that as your parents.
It is. But the thing is that I still will argue that market is the largest market of people. You know, they don't. You know, we live in this geek world where we think that everything has to do everything. And I have an Android phone, so I can do all the other things that I don't do on my iPhone. You know, so I get that. But
Doc Rock is saying in the chat room, it's also the long train commutes that mean people need more powerful phones. They spend more time in a train.
Yeah.
So it's a smaller.
One thing that confused me, though, is that, you know, Samsung is going to spend maybe $1 billion on marketing this phone. They were close to $500 million last year. And when I went down and played with it, and it was pre-release software, but the interface hasn't really changed. They haven't done anything. The icons are still oddly sized. There's no cohesiveness. There's no overall design language. When they showed off some of those Samsung proprietary apps, they sort of look like the Sony apps or the apps that are made by a hardware engineering team that really doesn't care about the way that they look. And I think that's the stumbling block for mainstream users. And that's why maybe you don't see as big usage statistics for these kinds of phones, because they're not as intuitive or as friendly or as engaging to use. Well, and I would hope they would take that money and give some of it to the Icon Factory or Pacific Helm or somebody.
Wouldn't that be nice? That thing. Hire Lauren Brichter.
One question I have is as Samsung continues to fork the Android platform, does it get to a point where it's such a big player in that it actually damages the platform? Like, does it become a Samsung platform and not an Android?
If you read the tea leaves at Google and Andy Rubin leaving Android it being handed over to Sundar Pichai, who's basically a company guy who's been running Chrome and Chrome OS, I think Google's saying that. Google's saying we lost control of Android. Mm-hmm. We got control of Chrome and Chrome OS. We've lost control of Android. It is, right now, it's a two-horse race. It's Apple and Samsung. Mm-hmm. HTC, BlackBerry, Nokia, all also-rans, not even close. They're way behind in the pack. It's Apple and Samsung.
Especially profit share. But
it's because they both have two very, very smart and non-overlapping strategies, where Apple's plan is we're going to figure out exactly the most profitable sector of the market, and we're going to build a device that is specifically targeted to appeal to those people. Whereas Samsung has said, we will build any phone for anybody. We don't care about making a plastic phone that we can sell for $8 in an international market where that is the most sensitive to price. We'll build it. We don't care about building four different sizes of screens just to make sure we're covering our bets and making sure that we can sell a phone to anybody who wants any size device. So it's not an elegant solution to the problem of how do you become a successful phone company, but it turns out to be a very successful solution to becoming a successful phone company.
I mean, I think that in the current the challenge is if it forks too far to the point where it's not really an Android, not really an Android phone anymore, and there's a lot of compatibility issues, then Samsung's really in their own ecosystem, which maybe they want.
No, that's what Amazon does. But Samsung's doing 4.2.2. I mean, it is Android. It's the latest version of Android. It's not much modified.
Samsung has their own app store already. I mean, they're the same as Amazon. They have their own app store. They talk to developers individually. They want you to submit your apps to them. They give you very detailed reports on your apps.
I never use the Samsung app store. It's just it's the crap store.
Whether developer or user, never use it.
Yeah.
It's like I don't think there's the problem of forking Android. I think it's a subtler point because Google has to be happy so long as there's lots of phones that are sending traffic into the Google Play Store.
They don't care.
Because the problem is that you can start your own Samsung store, but if it has nothing on it, and that's the state of the Samsung store right now, I mean, no one's going to actually use it. They're still going to be buying apps and music and videos through Android. Although I do know that going back to a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was a lot of priority inside Google of saying, look, we tried this idea, we're just going to give away this for free and we're going to let people do whatever they want with it. That's not working out for us because there's a lot of people who are doing terrible, terrible software that's no consistency from experience to experience. We're putting out wonderful stuff that nobody is using because they don't think it's important to use it. I do think that there was an active movement to say we're going to have to take a little bit of control back. Part of it was doing the first set of really comprehensive user interface guidelines to teach developers that this is what an Android app is supposed to look like. So
were just completely ignored by almost everybody.
Well, they keep changing so often too.
That's kind of true across the board because the things are moving away from when was the last I can't remember the last time that I tried a new iOS app and it really stuck to the classic interface that I expect with iOS,
which is a big problem because you don't know how to use any of these apps. Everything's different.
Well, but no, maybe not, because remember that the classic iOS interface is here is a list of things. You can drill down until you get to the content that you want. Right. You can have a couple of bars that have buttons with the tools that you want. I'm kind of glad to see developers breaking free of that and saying this is a tiny screen. It's not always going to be the Apple's solution is not always going to be the best solution for the sort of task the user is going to be at right now. So we're going to sort of break out of there. And also now that Android now that the tools are there for developers to create great Android apps and the users are there, the money's not there yet, but the users are there for Android users, there is more of an idea that if we're going to be putting lots of money into this app, we're going to have to think cross-platform and make sure that if we develop an app that rather than create two separate teams with two separate interfaces, we create one sort of agnostic interface that works great for whatever device we want to plaster this on.
What's interesting is that I think Android has become like the new embedded operating system. And it's true what Andy's saying, but we interviewed Pocket Casts last night. And they famously just made Pocket Casts first for Android instead of doing it for iOS. And it's the same story when you talk to someone like Sebastian DeWitt, who does Double Twist, is that it's still, you have to really care and you have to work really hard to make a good looking app on Android. You have to do them all 1x, 1.5x, 2x. The Nexus 7 is 1.33x. So people are, and Google says ignore it. Google says please don't make TV DPI apps. Just use Fragment. So, I mean, it's not as complicated, but I think it's telling that really good designers are starting to put in the effort to do it.
But they do have to put in the effort, and that's the point.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, come back. I didn't mean to turn this into the Samsung show. We got Apple news. Promise you. we're going to do a thing on know-how. I proposed this to Iaz, and he said, okay. Because I have the most recent Mac Pro, which is mid-2010.
Right.
It's almost 3 years old now. And I've given up on any update to that. So I'm looking at what you can do to update it. And there's not a whole lot. But I'm going to put a Fusion drive on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll talk about it because you say don't do that. Anyway, I'll show you what I bought and you tell me.
Okay.
And I would love input from the chat room because it looks like nobody's selling better. Mac Sales isn't. Other World Computing. Better video cards for this thing. They're selling the same video cards Apple sold 2.5 years ago. Depressing.
A Thunderbolt pass through.
And I got a Thunderbolt display, and there's no way to use it.
Yep.
Come on, Apple, please. We're brought to you today. I'm going to cry. Don't make me cry. This show brought to you today by LegalZoom.com. I'll tell you what, LegalZoom took a lot of the pain out of forming an LLC for me. And this is a great company. It's not a law firm, understand. When I was starting Twit, I didn't have any money. It was just me, and I definitely did not have the money to pay a white shoe lawyer to write up the paperwork for me. But I tell you, this is the way to do it. There's a lot of legal documents you can do yourself with the right Q&A, and that's what LegalZoom does. Incorporate your business or form an LLC, either one. You know, you could be a Inc. or a Look. Starting at $99, really makes you a big difference, forming your business the right way, not merely to protect yourself and your liability, but also for tax reasons and so forth. They can also do trademarks. If you're a blogger or you've got an Instagram brand, you might really want to think about protecting your brand.
You know, it's funny. Both of us have been slowly growing up together as two different companies. And you get to a certain point where you wish you had papered everything up.
It's kind of hard to do it after the fact.
It's hard because when you're small, you're thinking $500 an hour, $300 an hour, and I don't have time to do that. But it does definitely make sense to look at what you can do.
I can highly endorse this. I really can. They also do copyrights, NDAs, patents. And for your family, if you don't have a will, the government and the courts decide what happens to your assets and your kids. $69 to do a LegalZoom will. And this is this is a real will that has, absolutely legally binding will. You could do a living trust there. 12 years LegalZoom's been doing this. Over 2 million Americans have used them for LLCs, wills, trusts, and trademarks, many other things. They have a very simple, actually, it's really a lot easier even now than it was when I did it. I did it in 2005. It's 8 years ago. Wow. Step-by-step questionnaire, boom, boom, boom. And this is something else that I really like that they've added since I used it. There comes a point sometimes in these questionnaires where you go, I don't know. The one for me was, well, should I incorporate in California or Delaware? And I went on the internet and I'm looking and I didn't know. Would have been great if I could have called a lawyer and said, just this one question. But now LegalZoom has set up this LegalZoom legal plan where they have pre-negotiated fees, very affordable. Get your questions answered. And you can look online for the lawyer's profile and unedited customer reviews. So you know if this person's good, if they speak English, that kind of thing. So it's really great. You can add to the LegalZoom Q&A by asking a question of an attorney as you need it. It's a really wonderful company. I want you to visit LegalZoom.com for affordable, personalized protection at a price you can afford. They're not a law firm. Self-help services at your specific direction or speak to a legal plan attorney and get your questions answered. Get ongoing device, and we would love it if you would mention us when you check out. Just use the offer code MBW. We'll give you $10. Just kind of a little thank you. Buy you lunch. LegalZoom.com. Make sure you use the offer code MBW so they know where you heard about it. And, boy, don't delay this. This is something you'll be glad you have. LegalZoom.com. Offer code is MBW. So it's interesting that we have just spent half an hour talking about Samsung because that's really what the Congress...
Obviously, they were completely ineffective with their presentation.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about how stupid it was, but, you know, they did... So some very interesting conversations around this. In fact, you've got one yourself, Renee. Apple losing the war of words, asks Jean-Louis Gasset. Apple cedes the crown, mocks John Gruber. And Apple bites man, writes Renee Ritchie. Renee, you know, you stated perfectly clearly. What is the issue?
For me, it's a twofold issue. It's that there's this old journalism cliche that after a while, dog bites man becomes boring. So you write man bites dog, and all of a sudden, that's a very popular headline. And you sell it, and you sell lots of papers. And the thing with Apple is that while they're unpredictable, they do tend to follow patterns. And so this year, everyone's just assuming there'll be an iPhone 5S, and you know, basically, you fill in the blanks in your mind: better camera, better CPU.
Right.
And that story is not that interesting. And there's been so many stories for so long about how successful Apple is. That's not that interesting either. So you start to reverse that dynamic. And competitors have been very smart. I mean, going back to the HTC Nexus One, they learned when Apple would launch their products, usually between July and September. And so now we have the HTC One in the spring. We have the Z10 in the spring. We have the Galaxy S4 in the spring. And part of the reason we just spent 30 minutes talking about it is because there's no Apple event nowhere near us. The old iPhone's 6 months old. The next iPhone's 3 to 6 months away. It's the perfect time for competitors to make these stories and to sell papers, to get page views. It's the perfect time to start Apple is doomed headlines because people are interested in that. They'll click on that, and it becomes almost like a self-fulfilling machine.
So really, it's a flaw in the press. Although, you said an interesting thing. Apple is unpredictable, but in fact, it hasn't been in the last couple of years. I've seen a lot of noise lately from Apple partisans, people like M.G. Siegler and Gene Munster. In fact, they were on a panel, and I saw another analyst say the same thing. Apple's going to do something exciting and wacky. They don't know. No one knows. But almost wishful thinking.
Well, I think that this is what you lose when you don't have such a singular leader like Steve Jobs. That is, you know, the distortion field that people would talk about a lot. But the point is, I don't think Apple is moving much slower than they ever moved. I think that the real issue is that they don't have someone that everyone is paying attention to every word he says and how he says it and everything else. They don't. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with Tim Cook. It's just that he's not that. And
he's
kind of
pedestrian.
Yeah, well, I mean,
let's face it.
I mean, the issue is
Jobs knew this was a problem. I would guarantee you, Jobs was thinking all the time. Yeah, we're gonna lose the light. We're gonna lose the press. Let's keep this interesting. Let's keep the story. Let's manage the story. He was brilliant at managing the story from everything from, you know, personal massages for Walt Mossberg. I mean, he was brilliant at managing
the
story.
Well, they sent Schiller out last week, right?
Yeah, and Schiller's not brilliant. In fact, Schiller put his foot in his mouth.
Right. And so I think that's the issue is that they had such a brilliant leader and such a brilliant communicator that they were able to, you know, keep that, you know, keep control of the press. You know, I mean, like,
exactly.
You know, in a lot of ways. Now they don't have any of that singular attention that, and I think it makes it very hard for them to, you know, to manage the conversation.
Isn't that interesting? Because all the things we've been talking about is what happens without the genius of Jobs, the product. Mm-hmm. But really, I've always thought this. Jobs was a brilliant marketer, first and foremost.
With good taste.
Like, admittedly, he had good taste.
You know, wasn't
but not everything he made was huge and wonderful and successful.
No, absolutely. I still have a cube.
Johnny Ive has good taste.
Johnny Ive has good taste, and, right. And Steve was smart enough to hire him. But ultimately, what Jobs was brilliant at, and from day one, when he took Steve Wozniak's funky little wooden computer and got, you know, an injection molded box for it to make it look cool, was marketing. Positioning,
right?
You know, telling a story.
And Apple did change it up. They put out the iPad 4 in fall, which no one was expecting. And now there's rumors that there might be additional iPhone.
Not enough, though,
SKU,
right?
So no, not yet.
Not enough.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem, I think, is that Apple has had such a regular drumbeat of
completely new and very, very easy to understand new features to existing products, where you come out with, they've come out with traditional laptops. Now here's the MacBook Air, something completely different you haven't even seen before. Here's the phone you've never seen before. Here is a tablet you've never ever seen before. And here is a twist on the desktop PC to make it slimmer and cooler and nicer. And you've never seen that before. I think that they're sort of running into the same problem that a lot of the traditional manufacturers are having, which is that once you have a laptop and you can do very little to it at this point, but put in a better processor, make the screen a little bit bigger and affect the styling a little bit, it's hard to make the next thing you do look as significant as the amount of effort that you put into it. So I'm not sure if the press really has it in for Apple that much, so much as they're looking for the next story, and they're finding it as a traditional tech story. I mean, there are people who are definitely want to see Apple die. There are people who definitely want to see who are so hungry. This is incredible. They're so hungry to have the next. Oh, here's the next miraculous device. The Galaxy S4 got the front page of the New York Post.
There you go.
Not a little box in the corner. I'm talking about the entire page was a color photo of the S4 with 8-inch high letters like man walks on moon size, calling it iPhone, EYE phone, miraculous new phone you control just by looking at it.
Well, and there, that's now you know, by the way, who that event was aimed at. It was a New York Post.
Yes.
No, seriously, and it's kind of somewhat down market readership. And it was successful. They got the front page. That's the millions of dollars they spent on that event are justified right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they had millions. I mean, it was one of the most viewed. I mean, I think it was. I don't know what the number.
Half a million people watched live.
Right. That's
so that's real people. That ain't tech journalists. Right. Phil Schiller says Android. So he went out. Oh, Phil. He went out and did interviews on the eve of the S4 announcement. He called Android a free replacement for a feature phone, and then really, this was to the Wall Street Journal, and then really put his foot in his mouth by saying the S4 is going to have a year old operating system. Wrong. In fact, it has the latest version of Android. Did he hurt his credibility by saying that?
I don't know if he hurt his credibility, but I think that it sort of, in some intangible way, diminishes the prestige of Apple when they start talking that way about other people's products. It's not as though it's unprecedented for Apple, and certainly not unprecedented for other companies to do. But this is not what you commonly associate with the company that owns the entire market. Owns the crown of we're the coolest, most successful, most innovative company. The smart thing would be to use other channels to get that message out and not really stick your neck out quite that far. I mean,
Spiro T. Agnew of Apple now. You know how the vice president's always the attack dog?
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to get that message out that are a little bit more subtle, and again, doesn't really put the Apple logo quite so big on that statement. But the other thing is that the thing that maybe surprised me a little bit more was that they now redid the iPhone product site to be very much, here is why the iPhone is still great. Here's why it's still relevant. And although it's perfectly true that I think they had four or five points, three or four of which were absolutely on the mark. One was kind of questionable, but it's a finer point. I couldn't help but going through all my memories of all the ways that big companies used to advertise, it really looked like the sort of ads that like IBM used to take out when they started being challenged by the Macintosh, when they started being challenged by like clone makers, where we feel as though we have to put our case to the users that when you buy into IBM, you're buying into the quality product. You're buying into the network of support that doesn't exist anywhere else. You're buying into the premium engineering that goes back for decades instead of, you know, some PC that just got taken off of some sort of boat from China or some other country. And I can't say there's necessarily anything bad about it, but it's not something I'm used to seeing coming out of Apple. I mean,
well, and I think Apple, for all this, remember
that this is the company that also did the "Hi, I'm a Mac," "Hi, I'm a PC."
Right, but that didn't feel defensive. That was offensive. This is defensive,
right?
Yeah. If look at this is iPhone 5, loving it is easy. That's why so many people do, And then they step through, you know, all the thinner, lighter design, why you'll love an iPhone. By the way, all new design, a year old, all new design.
Click on the why you love the iPhone, Leo. That's where you have all the good stuff.
Oh, where is that? So the first one, why?
Go down a little bit.
Why iPhone, that
go
one?
Down, go down.
Why iPhone.
That's why it. iPhone. There's an iPhone, then there's everything else. What makes like a J.D. Power and Associate 8 straight awards for customer satisfaction. This is a good selling point. They're really focusing on the hardware, which does look superior to the plasticky Samsung phones. Yeah, although the HTC One looks just like this.
The HTC One looks phenomenal.
Yeah. Retina display, that's a mistake to point that out, since they are now being beaten in DPI by almost everybody, including HTC
and
Samsung.
They have in-cell, but they don't make it clear they're talking about the technology and not the resolution in the ad.
Yeah. Great battery life. That's a point, although the Samsung 4 has a removable battery, which kind of obviates that issue. I would say you get comparable battery life, and then you can put a new battery in, which you can't do. Powerful but not power-hungry A6 chip, ultra-fast wireless and LTE. Again, all of these things don't seem to be unique. This is the one, if you ask me, is the camera.
Mm. What's interesting is that Apple to Andy's point, Apple does do this. I mean, Tim Cook and Steve Jobs all the time took shots at Android, the lack of tablet apps, the poor quality of their devices, the lack of integration. They had the, you know, buy a Mac campaign. But to me, the difference here is that in mobile, in PC industry, they were always an underdog. But in mobile, they've never been the market share leader. There was Nokia and BlackBerry when they started, and now there's Android. But they've always been the mind share leader, and they've always been the profit. Well, at least for a while, they've been a profit share leader. And Samsung is the first company that's threatening their mind share and their profit share. And it looks to me like they're going back to the playbook that they used for the Get a Mac and the little snarky comments that they would put in the keynotes. And that's sort of what's driving these new pages.
Yeah. But the difference is that, remember when Jobs and Cook and the rest would make those comments, it was within a context where someone was asking them their opinion. Whereas Schiller's comments seemed like, okay, we know that the subtext seemed to be, we know that our competitor is going to be getting a lot of press today. We want to make sure that we have a statement out. Right, exactly. We want to be part of that scrum of conversation too. Whereas, again, it's sort of like there's a point at which the king has to stay on the throne to have that same sort of regal authority. When he jumps down from the throne to throttle the fool with his bare hands, he appears to be less of a king.
Yeah, very good. Well, nice analogy.
John Chrétien did that, by the way. We have a prime minister who actually did that.
He throttled the jester, huh? I love John Gruber's obviously a baseball fan. He says Phil Schiller committed an unforced error by mentioning the fact incorrectly that the S4.
It is an interesting point, though, Leo, because by the time this phone ships, there might be Google I/O, there might be a new version of
there
Android.
There will be.
And given how much Samsung has paved over Android to make this phone, the likelihood of a speedy update for the next generation is nil, but I don't think consumers care anymore.
No, that's always been a selling point for Apple. But you're right. I don't think. Now, by the way, they buried, to me, the things that you want an iPhone 5 for are way down below, starting with the camera, then the apps, then Siri. And these are things that are real differentiators. I'm not sure I'd mention iCloud if I were Apple, but that's...
I like Google Now, but if you use not my iPhone, all the apps I use all the time, there are absolutely no equivalents yet because they're all made by small, independent developers like the Tweetbots and the Launch Centers.
I wouldn't hold on to that too long, though, because that's going to shift.
It might. Right? Here's my only argument against the fact that I still think developers for a long time are going to be developing for the iOS first.
Really?
And the reason is that I think
because it's not purely a financial calculation.
No, it is a financial calculation.
Small developers are going to like iOS first always, and that's where the most creative and interesting apps come from. We've got $5 million in backing. We're starting with a staff of 20. It's the two guys who have a really, two gender neutral programmers who just have a great idea and they're building it for their own. And then halfway through, they realize that, wait a minute, we've got something here. And that
witness
awesome stuff.
Jessica
never will arrive on Android.
Witness Jessica Lesson's piece in the Wall Street Journal in praise of Lauren Brichter, the high priest of app design. Of course, Lauren will not develop for Android. He says specifically.
Well, and the thing is that when you make a decision as a developer, so we used to develop for Windows and Mac. This is not the same, but in a lot of ways, we stopped developing for Windows because it was higher level of support, harder to develop, and the pen, and we got nitpicked all the time. The people who bought it nitpicked us a lot more than on the Mac side. And so we just decided, you know, and we looked at
you didn't like, you know, the users, is, well, what you're saying.
Here's the thing, is that it was
that is that, cold, man.
It was like, it was just
harsh.
Like, you know, there were a thousand little things that, you know, it really just it drowned us. Every time a Windows user, the amount of time that we had to spend supporting them was so much higher than a Mac. And you know, it was just, it just really, we just decided it wasn't worth it. And so the issue that I bring to the Android issue is that, you know, not all users are created equal. And I don't mean this to say that Mac users are better, but they are, but iPhone users are people who, they just want it to work. They're willing to pay a little extra for it to work. And mm-hmm. that's a very valuable consumer, right. You know, is that when it works, that, you know, they're not trying to hack it. They're not trying. I mean, there are people that try to hack it. But what I'm saying is the average, you know, consumer is not trying to hack it. They're not trying to push the, you know, the envelope at every moment of what the hardware can do. They just want it to work. And they'll pay a little extra, and they don't want everything for free, and they don't want everything.
That,
you know,
might
and,
be an old fashioned point of view.
I agree with you.
When in the old days, that might have been true. But do you think that's really true now?
I just think that it's a different personality still. I think that I don't know. The people that I know that have Android phones tend to be the geekier, or the ones that bought it cheaper. It's not right. The middle of the road, yeah. And that, you know, that it just, that
and
just
Andy.
Kind of use this as a device.
And Andy,
the guys at Shifty Jelly, we asked them this yesterday, and they said that it's overall true, but you can specifically target something. For example, they saw a paucity of podcast apps on Android because Google Listen went away, and there were no good ones. And the people who are interested in podcasts are willing to spend money for a good podcast app. So they specifically target it, and they think that there's several opportunities like that. But when you look at iOS and you look at like Fantastical, or like I said, or Launch Center Pro, there's a lot of areas like that, and a lot of small developers who come from a design and Mac background. One of the biggest advantages Apple had is that they had an existing platform that was beloved by really good independent developers and designers. And those people just want to make apps for the phones that they use, and they mostly still use iPhones. That's a huge advantage.
Richter says he still, and this is a lesson writing in the Wall Street Journal, he still doesn't release apps for Google's Android operating system because he thinks the hardware and software aren't as good as Apple's. Now, maybe that's just politically correct. You don't want to say in public, and their users suck. Only Alex is willing to say that.
I'm not saying that the users are suck, because the thing is they're just a different kind of user. I mean, the thing is that they have users that, you know, you have users that really want to push it, and they're upset when it's a closed environment, and they're just a different, it's just a different personality. That's all.
It covers such a broad spectrum. So they're so hard to pin down. There are the people who want a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more control, but then there are those people who absolutely don't care, in which they feel as though your basic smartphone that you can get at the store, no matter who makes it, is like a really good, call it a 16-ounce steak, whereas the iPhone is a 64-ounce really good steak, meaning that there's more there than they really care about or really want to eat, and so they're not going to appreciate the finer points of it. That doesn't mean they're stupid. It means that I'm here to take this out of my pocket, to put something on Facebook, take a picture of whatever, and then put it back in my pocket and go away. I'm never going to be so involved with this phone that I'm going to appreciate how much easier iOS is to use, how much more reliable it is, how much coherent it is from app to app to app. And those people are more pressed to think, I would rather have something that's a little bit smaller. I would much rather have something that's a little bit bigger. I would much rather have something that has an actual physical keypad or a flip-out keyboard. Or internationally, I just want to save $75 on this phone. I don't see that I'll get $75 more worth of value out of an iPhone versus an Android phone. So it's so hard to pin these people down. So that's why it's so hard to say that, oh, well, the reason why that Apple is outselling Android in this market is because of this. The reason why Android is outselling Apple in this market is because of this. It's just so random.
And so now we know the iPhone 5S will be called the ribeye phone.
Right.
Way,
that's exactly. You know, but I think that when you look at the profit, you know, that Apple's making versus Samsung, which I think is now in, you know, approaching, you know, 2.5x. I think that points again to the type of consumer that Apple is pulling in, and I think that also informs the developers, you know, like of who's spending money where and who's willing to spend that extra margin. And I think that, like, you know, we look at, because we're looking at developing some apps right now. We would develop them for the iOS, and if they're successful, then we'll port them over. But I, you know, we're not, or we do, you know.
Yeah, well, I think
HTML5.
There's something to be learned about what causes that person to buy that for an Android phone instead of the iPhone, because I would have thought that it's about the app library, or would have thought it's about what they expect to get out of the phone. What surprised the heck out of me was at the Comixology had a panel event at New York Comic Con, and I asked the CEOs and the executives, like, they wouldn't break out what their usership is by percentage, by platform. But they did say the interesting tidbit that the Android market is disproportionately larger than their iPhone market in terms of the number of people who download that version of the Comixology software. But even though the iOS market is so much smaller, they purchase a disproportionately larger amount of comics. I don't know whether that's because so many of these devices are actually iPads, which are much better as a comic book reader. But I think that was sort of an indication that there is something about the decision to buy an iPhone is matched with a decision to keep purchasing content for it. So
I wonder if nowadays people don't even make the decision to buy an iPhone. It's just like, well, I'm an iPhone person. I just buy iPhones. Do you think people, how many people are really consciously going, they go to the store, the AT&T store or whatever, and go, iPhone or Android? I think you self-identify. Same as you did with Mac and Windows.
Anymore. Do they know Android, or they just want the Samsung phone or the free phone?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they don't even think Android.
Or I think that if you've got an iPhone, you've got to have an exquisite reason to switch away from it, because the benefits of sticking with the decision you already have are
also,
just
you
so
know
high.
It. You've spent money.
Well, and the apps are a big deal. I mean, I have
you know it.
I have like 500 apps or something. So the thing is
it's
that
like
I,
being
that
a Democrat or Republican. People don't kind of randomly change. They have to be convinced. And I think at this point, people have separated into the two camps. The thing is, and I think we pointed out this out last week, there's a huge number of people who don't have smartphones. Like 45% of the market has not even purchased a smartphone yet. And that, I would guess, is the market that Samsung's going after with 50s housewives and wet nail polish.
Lower cost devices.
I like the ribeye phone. I think it would be really
tasty. Gruber's been saying the same thing that Andy's been saying for a while about the different kinds of customers, and he gets heat for it sometimes, but I think he makes his case well, not only in that article, but in another recent article, where there are people who are drawn to Apple's products who will spend in a way that is enticing to certain companies to support.
That was always the case with Macintosh as well. Mac owners don't pirate as much. They buy software. They're a little more committed to
quality. And
they're also quality.
Much pickier about the interface.
Yeah, but they don't call you, apparently.
What I will say. No, well, I mean, it wasn't the PC.
They don't bug you.
No, it would just be like, I'm trying to fit this. They'd have some
Face
wonky
it,
built machine. No, they just have some wonky built machine that they couldn't get our software to run on. And we were just like, just go out and get a
machine. That is a good
machine.
Point, because the Mac environment is very
machines.
Homogeneous.
The thing is it was like, you know, with a Mac, there was like six different ways that they could have had it configured. With a PC, it was...
Yeah, but go ahead and try to find an up-to-date video card for your Mac Pro.
No. I think it's...
excuse me.
I mean, I'm a firm believer. I mean, my preference would be all I want Apple to do. I mean, so I don't need Apple to do a Mac Pro anymore. I just want them to take away
the
chip. Just stop looking for the whatever it is, the EFI chip or whatever it is, and just let people just
Hackintosh.
Install. Yeah,
just
Hackintosh. Without having to hack it.
I'm so tempted to Hackintosh at this point, because this machine is not powerful.
Right.
They want you to buy an iMac, Leo, and use the Mac Pro as a peripheral, a network attachment.
I bought the iMac. I mean, I've already done that part.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, come back. Google Now for iOS, perhaps. Maybe Google even says, hey, we'd rather develop for the iOS platform. Who knows? I don't know. Even Google says, yeah, I know it's a better platform. Actually, I think that is true. There are definitely people within Google who carry iPhones, who want to develop for iPhone, who have no interest. And I would say many of the Google apps look much better on iPhone than they do on Android.
iOS is a better SDK and a better set of frameworks than Android's.
And these developers would prefer to use it.
Yeah.
And if you work at Apple stores in France, you might prefer to work there because you're not allowed to work late. Did you see that?
I saw that.
The government of France has banned Apple from forcing employees to do those overnight shifts and late shifts if they don't want to.
It wasn't overnight shifts. They were late shifts.
Just late.
Like, you can't work until 11.
That is dinner time.
The coffee shops are closed.
Dinner stores are closed.
They're also no longer required to set down their glass of red wine before it's
baguette has to go.
All right. Our show today brought to you by our friends at audible.com. I walked to work and I listened to my audiobook. I am so bad now. I cannot put it down. I've been doing a lot of driving lately, and Audible has been a lifesaver. I got pulled over a couple of nights ago by the CHP. It was St. Patrick's Day, and I think they were looking for drunk drivers. And they said, you don't seem to be paying attention to where you're going.
I said, I'm in a really good book.
And exactly. I didn't want to say this. He was very kind. He didn't give me a ticket. I said, yeah, I'm a little distracted. Thank you, officer, for letting me know. I'm just kind of lost. I'm trying to figure out which was an area. I get in the East Bay. I get lost. I don't know where I am. But the truth is, the real truth, I was loving. I'm coming to the end of book two of the Kingkiller Chronicles, Patrick Rothfuss masterpiece, and it's getting good. Actually, there was the first sex scene. Ooh. Two whole books. This is, I finally figured out it's Harry Potter for grown-ups, and man, is it good. It is so good. But that's just one of 100,000 wonderful books on Audible.com. There, talk about somebody knocking it out of the park. Maybe you've never listened to, look at this, Drunken Botanist, the plants that create the world's great drinks. This would be perfect for you, Alex Lindsay. Amy Stewart. Every great drink starts with
a
plant.
Why is this the perfect thing for me?
Because you're a drunk. No, because you appreciate mixology, do you
yes,
not?
Yes, I do.
You're a master of mixology.
Yes.
Herbal essences.
Alex prefers the term lush. It's more endearing.
Yes, exactly. Let's soften that down.
Sake began with rice.
Brooks than a,
yes.
Scotch begins with barley. Mm-hmm. Gin was born from a conifer shrub when medieval physicians boiled juniper berries with wine to treat stomach pain. Did you know that?
And absinthe is
ooh, baby, wormwood. So I'm going to read this. This looks fantastic. The Drunken Botanist, the plants. You see, I say read, and I know I'm not supposed to because it's listen. But you get every word of the book. They're unabridged. It's as if you were reading the book. See, he's already opening his Audible app.
I'm not a drunk. Wait, hold on.
No, I have a bunch of really good books about mixology and the
truth. We used to do it.
If you're drunk, you don't care. Yeah, if you're drunk, you don't care. You drink, Thunderbird. But if you're a mixologist,
see that's what I
you're
keep on telling my wife.
Of adult beverages.
Yes, exactly. I say I'm not getting Gilby's.
That's crap.
Exactly.
So Audible, I don't know if Audible really appreciates us positioning it this way, but it really is a wonderful. The new serious tech books. Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, is now out on audible.com. By the way, same day it was released in a hardcover. And that's one of the things that's great about Audible is all the big books now come out on Audible. Brilliant business books, fascinating tech books, mysteries, it'll grab you, thrillers, fiction and nonfiction. It's all there. Nora Roberts' newest, Whiskey Beach, is available for pre-order. I know some people who just read every Nora Roberts book as if it was, gold. You could pre-order this. Here's the deal. I'm going to get you a free book. The problem is choosing the free book. So that's why I'm mentioning so many different titles. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for the gold plan. That's a book a month. Your first month is free. Your first book is free. And you can cancel in the first 30 days, pay nothing, but keep that book forever. This is good if you're interested in economics. The Battle of Bretton Woods, John Maynard Keynes, Harry Dexter White, and the Making of a New World Order. This I can't wait to read. See, I learn a lot. Audible for me is an education. And the best part is I'm getting that education at a time that otherwise I'd be listening to, Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe. I'm in the car, I'm driving, or I'm working out at the gym. I'm walking Ozzy, the dog. I'm doing the housework. Yesterday, my day off, piles of laundry, doing a lot of laundry. And I've got, because I have a Sonos, Audible playing throughout the house. I'm listening to my book as I'm going around doing the chores, cleaning the house. I love that. I invite you to try it. I think you're going to like it. The Audible apps on iPhone, Android, Windows 8. They have a Metro app that's gorgeous. Windows Phone, too. You've got to try it. Audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up for your free book. Then you tell me what you are enjoying on Audible.com. We thank Audible so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Do you think Google will do Google Now, or is that just a hoax video? There was a video posted of Google Now for iOS. Google Now is perhaps the single most interesting thing on Android.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder why they would consider giving it away as no longer an advantage, though.
I don't know if they could technically do it on iOS. I don't think they'd have this anywhere near the system access. I mean, they could pull location, they could pull a lot of stuff, but what makes Google Now so interesting is the way that it's integrated into Android,
right.
And the App Store just doesn't. I mean, that's a problem for Apple too. It's a different, it's a strange problem because Siri doesn't work anywhere near as well as Google Now, but Apple doesn't own Siri really. They use Nuance boxes. And Nuance is very, anyone who knows anything about Nuance knows that they're a very controlled company, and Apple, you know, can't do local, they can't do local voice the way Google does. They can't do a lot of the features that make Google Now so great.
Is that why Siri the app was more capable than Siri by Apple? Because the app did all sorts of stuff.
They've signed a lot more partnerships, and Apple has, Apple hasn't re-signed a lot of the original Siri partnerships.
Like OpenTable and, yeah.
But I think also still, I mean, it's Siri is sitting on Nuance boxes. It's not, unless Apple controls their own Siri destiny, I think they'll be behind Google Now for a while.
They got to get going, because that's...
But it's also, I'm not even sure if it's a question of being behind. They're just two very different services where, I got to say that Siri is one of the things I really miss about my iPhone, because it really is there to be the person, the assistant in the next room that when you ask it to do something, it will do it for you and figure out exactly what you want it to do. Google Now is more like the assistant who, when you take your jacket off of the chair, you find that the tickets to the concert you're going to tonight are already in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, they're both really, really powerful, both really, really wonderful in their own ways, but they don't really intersect, I think, a lot.
The only thing I meant by that was that, like, Siri is absolutely, it's a Pixar character. My little 5-year-old godson was texting me today using Siri because to him it's his friend. He's like, you know, text my godfather, say this. But Google Now can, for example, if I want to change a calendar setting or an alarm setting, something local to my phone, my iPhone or iPad, I still have to go to the network, which creates a point of failure where Google has put a lot of the voice recognition local on the device. And Apple, as far as I know, can't do that. I mean, Nuance bought Vlingo. They're basically the only name in this kind of technology now. Google very smartly hired somebody who made a lot of the key patents in this technology so they can walk around.
It's the guy who founded Nuance, in fact. Yeah.
And Apple doesn't have that privilege. And that's unusual for Apple. Apple often suffers the most when people make fun of Apple for being controlling, but like AT&T or UPS deliveries or Nuance boxes, they get in a lot of trouble for the things that they don't control.
Right. Weave is going to jail. This is the guy. Remember, we talked about this, the iPad security flaw. And now this is what he did. And I'm wondering if 41 months in jail is the right sentence for this guy. He figured out that you could query the Apple servers and get, let's see, how does this work? It was actually a flaw in AT&T's iPad database. So when you entered into the web panel an ICC IDD, the number that authenticates the SIM card, it would give you, if you entered the right number, it would give you email addresses. So he wrote a script that just would query AT&T's website with these IDs and collected hundreds of thousands of addresses. They apparently, according to the court records, chatted about using this script for a phishing operation or lulls, but then they decided to give the information to Gawker, and that database was revealed. The hole was fixed by AT&T. He was prosecuted aggressively by the feds. They've lately taken these computer crimes, they've always taken these computer crimes very seriously, perhaps more seriously than they take real world crimes. That's one of the arguments people make. And was found guilty on one count of identity fraud, one count of conspiracy to access a computer without authorization. And he has been ordered to pay $73,000 in restitution along with his co-defendant, Daniel Spittler. And he's going to jail for 41 months.
As the son of a lawyer, I'm just going to say that I think his number one issue is hubris.
You do the crime, you got to do the time.
No, hubris.
Well,
If you look at the quotes, I'm just telling you that I can't even imagine what his deposition sounded like. You know, and the thing is that you have to understand
there's
a lot of people who, you know, end up doing a lot more time than they need to because they just can't keep their mouth shut.
Yeah,
and I don't think
my lawyer's
always
telling me to keep my mouth shut. You're right, absolutely.
But when you're in a court case, you just have to understand that you know, being arrogant at that point is not usually your best bet.
In January, he told The Verge he wanted to get the maximum sentence possible,
and there he got it.
So that people would rise up and storm the decks.
He probably won't.
Anybody rising up?
That's the issue. Hubris.
Hubris. he did an AMA the day before sentencing, and in the sentencing hearing, the prosecution quoted his AMA,
right,
his IAMA from Reddit, three times in their justification for sentencing. Oh, well.
I mean, I just think that it, I think I don't think this is necessarily.
But
I mean,
you got to acknowledge the fact that the feds are absolutely hard ass on this stuff.
I think that cybersecurity is something that keeps everybody in Washington, D.C. up at night. I mean, the amount of damage that can be done right
yeah,
now.
Defacing a website, which is not, I would argue, much worse than defacing the front of a building, is getting 10 times the sentence.
I don't agree with the sentencing. I think that everyone's worried about it, but I think that the length of his sentence has much less to do with what he did and more has to do with all the stuff he did between the time he was arrested and the time he was sentenced. There's just a long string of you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, you also have to think about exactly how he executed this. There's ways to prove that this idea that you have works. And then once you've said, okay, I've demonstrated that this works. Now if I try to harvest hundreds of thousands of email addresses, this is a totally separate thing. These 10 email addresses that I have right now prove that this thing works.
That would have been sufficient, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same reason why there are times when I feel as though I have a responsibility to test certain paralegal, shall we say, software, mostly for like acquiring movies and stuff like that. But it's like, I've tested the software. I've downloaded one ancient episode of something that I think is about 30 years old anyway. I've proven how easy it is to get this. I've proven how well the software works. Now, if I try to get every episode of Game of Thrones, I'm just doing it because I want free Game of Thrones, not because I need to prove anything.
Right. And the thing is that when you get pulled over for speeding, if you start yelling at the cop, it's going to get a lot worse than it was just pulling over for speeding. And I think
I've learned that. I thanked the officer. I said, I appreciate that. Yeah. I realize I was not driving perfectly. And thank you, sir, for saving my life.
Once you're in that spin.
And he said, okay, move on. I think he knew who I was. My license plate says Twit TV. I gave him the license. He didn't even look at it.
Right.
He was looking in at me.
So
I think he was a fan. That's happened before. I've been pulled over by cops before who were fans. Scared the hell out of me.
Right.
That is
Leo,
interesting.
Leo,
you kind of forget that law enforcement are actual, like, real human
normal
beings.
Normal humans.
Yeah, because there was two things that I'm going to say because they're very, very useful. Where I was at some sort of a wedding or something where they found out that one person at our table was a state trooper. Of course, someone asks, not me, well, how do I get out of a speeding ticket? Ha ha. And he said, let me be honest with you. If when I flash my lights, you pull them over immediately to a safe part of the highway.
I did that.
You roll down your driver's side window. You put your right hand, your left hand right here on the sill.
Yep.
You put your other hand right on the top of the steering wheel.
I did that.
As I'm walking towards you, I see both of your hands that you don't have a gun in either one of them. Yep. This leaves me in a very, very positive frame of mind to listen to what
I did exactly that. I rolled down the window. I put my license out the window, put my hand on the window. I did exactly that because what I feel for these guys? That's got to be a terrifying thing for them. You don't know what you're going to see. Some clown in a red Mustang.
It's a bit of a rat hole, but I mean, you got to remember that 30% of all police officers killed in the line of duty are at routine traffic stops.
So
they
exactly.
are pressured.
The phrase that stuck with me all these years was, I will be rest assured that you're not willing to kill me and make my children orphans and my wife a widow because you skipped out on a $50 payment and you don't want to go back to jail for 30 days.
But and to get back to this case,
I have deep respect for these guys. They work hard, and I was actually was grateful. Because apparently I'd been going over the shoulder a little bit, and I was grateful that he pulled me over. And I drove very carefully after that.
And just to bring it back to the story, I mean, I think that the issue is that once he really just did not. I don't know if he didn't think he was going to get it, or he really did want to be a martyr and get this. He really taunted people.
He wanted to go to jail.
I want the maximum sentence,
let's talk to him in four years and see how he feels about that. Yeah. I remember Kevin Mitnick. With a stack of tuna cans, because that was all he would eat in prison, because the food was so god awful.
Right.
And if you're a hacker, in fact, I tried to get this phobia of the guy who was hacking Matt Honan, and now it turns out might have been hacking Brian Krebs, to talk to Kevin Mitnick, and Mitnick said, "No, I'm not going to talk to him because I kind of I'm probation right now. Wouldn't be a good idea for me to talk to an active hacker." But I wanted him to talk to Mitnick because Mitnick will say, "You go to jail." Do not be cocky. This is this is not a game. These guys take this really, really seriously, whether rightly or wrongly. They've got the power right now. There's no point in challenging it.
Right.
Maybe we should consider and talk about the
issue. Once you've settled it or it's all ended, you can go back to yelling and screaming and doing whatever you want to do. But when you're in the midst of the decision process, it's not.
I don't like talking about court cases, but we're going to briefly mention that Apple's being sued by THX for misusing patented speaker technology in the iPhone, the iPad, and the Mac. George Lucas's company's no longer with it, but he founded the company. The patent number 483, narrow profile speaker configurations and systems granted in 2008, enhancing sound quality in a very small space.
Coming for your iMac, Leo. They're coming for your iMac.
They can't have it. They can't have it.
They've got lightsabers.
I don't mention these court cases because, you know, who knows what this means. Maybe they'll settle in 3 days.
This is not necessarily, like, this isn't the same as a patent troll. A patent troll.
This is something they're making.
So this is, I mean...
I've been taught, by the way, we don't say patent trolls. We say NPEs.
Jerky jerks.
You could say jerky jerks.
Stupid.
NPEs, non-practicing entities, i.e. somebody who bought a patent not with the intent of making it, but with the intent of enforcing it. An NPE, a.k.a. patent troll.
Massively litigious.
Patent troll. I'm not going to talk about Apple and Samsung and lawsuits. Who cares? Boring.
iOS update, Leo,
1.3,
yeah.
Just now?
Earlier today, Maps for Japan, and they fixed the passcode bypass.
Ah, they needed to do that. That was that wasn't fixed in 6.1.2.
No.
So, yep. So that's worth doing, folks, especially if you leave your iPhone in bars. You might want to update. See, it hasn't been pushed out to me yet.
I got it this morning.
I'm going to run software update. Checking for update. Apple is proposing on-the-go wireless charging via iPad smart cover with built-in battery. Yeah, there it is. Improvements and bug fixes. Download and install. Qi wireless charging is in the Samsung Galaxy S4 too. So there's two things I'd like to see in the next iPhone. NFC and wireless charging, yes or no?
I don't think they'd use NFC. It's a great feature. I absolutely love it. As a matter of fact, I just set up a new thing in my in the Samsung so that when I put it on the nightstand, just the act of placing it there sets an alarm for 8 o'clock the next morning. That's pretty sweet. But that really is the sort of thing that is kind of advanced. I don't think it really is in that, you know, that meaty part of the bell curve that people are going to use. Wireless charging is something that they could really get into because it is such a user-facing feature. You just drop it on this one thing and it will always be charging. The question is, would they be willing to compromise, or excuse me, would they be willing to make the engineering adjustments and design adjustments they'd have to make in order to make wireless charging work? They'd probably have to make it a little bit, you would expect, no, I wouldn't say we probably, but you would expect them to make it a little bit thicker.
Galaxy S4 is really thin.
Big.
Yeah, but again, yeah, exactly. It's a lot space. Bigger than the phone that it's they're thinking about making. Right.
Plus remember
that this one of the odd things that you don't really instantly know about the Samsung is that guess where the NFC chip is on this? It is actually on top of the battery.
I know.
So that if you use a third-party battery, for instance, that doesn't have the Samsung logo on it, you don't have NFC.
Smart move.
And the reason for that is because it has to be out and it has to be exposed. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, it's a very, very... They're not kidding when they say near-field communication. It's damn near in order to...
And why the plastic back, too, because metal would impede that.
Yeah, I'm not totally clear that NFC. I mean, the problem is you look at like what Square does. I walk into a coffee shop down the street. Stop. It knows that I'm there when I arrive. I don't need I don't need to put my phone down on anything. I don't need to scan it.
Yeah, there's a problem with that though. You can't have two places next to each other.
Yeah, and also do you really want to keep your radios
if you're there though?
Do you really want to keep your radios open and active all the time for that one time every 4 days when you're going to use it? The NFC doesn't really draw any power until it's actually activated.
Yeah, I think that as the geofencing gets better, though, I think that the problem is that solves it.
Square will not let you do it if your neighbor's doing it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to be.
And it also brings up that people tend to discount NFC because they come to the argument, well, look how much better it works. Passbook works just by using actual barcodes, which is very, very true. But NFC is about so much more than just payments. So
I think NFC is a better solution. I don't want to say it's not a better. It's just that we see a lot of better solutions that don't make it, just because other solutions are good enough. And I think that's the challenge they're going to have.
Yeah, and people when I give people like an NFC magic show, you know, it's pretty. I'm actually loaning a friend an Android phone because he wants to try it out for a while, and he's actually going to be at PAX East, and so I'm going to give him an NFC sticker that he can put inside his badge, and so that anytime someone wants his website for his webcomic, he can just like hold out his badge and just tap you. Is that an Android phone? Just tap it against this, and your web browser will be taken to it automatically, because it's a great magic show. People who know how to use that feature can get a lot out of it. Again, so many things I do are so much simplified with NFC, but it's not the sort of thing that I think a typical iPhone user is going to want to get into.
You're probably wondering what's happening to the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs movie. I know I am, apparently delayed.
I can't bathe or feed myself with concern.
I think it's delayed because it's so god-awful. The clip we saw was just the worst. Yeah. I mean, not only historically inaccurate, just
Oz
bad.
Did not have Weird Al Yankovic hair at any point in his life.
But get this. Funny or Die has made an hour and 10-minute version of the Steve Jobs movie itself. It's going to debut at April 15th. It's called I, Steve, and who better to star as Steve Jobs than I'm a Mac, Justin Long. Now, that's good casting.
I think it's great casting.
He looks a little bit more like the frugal gourmet in that
It doesn't look like Steve. But remember, you don't have to, you know.
It is Funny or Die.
It's funnier, but even not. I mean, do you have to look like the character you're portraying? I mean, I guess, what's his name? Daniel Day-Lewis kind of looks like Lincoln, but right. He's an actor. It doesn't have to look exactly like him.
Especially for comedy.
Well, I guess this is going to be interesting because there are those who consider Steve sacrosanct. But, of course, that's what makes the best comedy.
Yeah. Rainn Wilson as Bill Gates. I will contribute $50 towards that booking.
So the script was written in 3 days. So
and there was a lot of drinking involved. It could maybe be some smoking.
You know, sometimes the stuff that's written that fast is genius.
Right.
I don't know if Aaron Sorkin works quite so fast, but anyway, and was the movie was made in 5 days.
Nice.
So.
Was Roger Corman involved in any of this?
The guy who wrote the script said, Perez said, we might not be the best, but we will be the first.
Well, the hard thing for the Sorkin film, of course, is if it comes out and people start saying, well, that one was better.
Well, the Sorkin film, oh, that would be bad for Sorkin, yeah. So Sony's making the Sorkin film. Jobs... The Ashton Kutcher film did get shown at Sundance in January. I don't know anybody who saw it. It was supposed to come out April 19th, and they're scrapping that plan. The distributor said, we didn't have enough time to mount a proper marketing campaign. My guess is...
Wasn't that the excuse in Spinal Tap? Oh, your shows were canceled due to lack of advertising funds.
Going straight to History Channel 3.
I bet it's the worst movie you've ever seen.
Put more Hitler scenes in it. We'll put on the Hitler channel.
Oh my God! I do want to see the Funny or Die version. This is pretty ambitious. It's the longest project Funny or Die has ever done. Ryan Perez said in the scriptwriter, in true internet fashion, it's not based on very thorough research, but I essentially a cursory look at the Steve Jobs Wikipedia page.
I love this movie. I throw
already
my complete
love it.
Support behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, already love it. They should have done a Kickstarter. What were they thinking? They could have made millions.
They probably would have.
Of course they would have.
Yeah, if
Veronica Mars could make $3 million on Kickstarter.
This would have been $10 million going out without even, you know.
$10 million easy. Samsung says, we're making a watch, really. Okay.
Me too.
Whatever.
I would really, Leo. Can you start a rumor that Apple's sort of making a flying car? Because I'd really like to buy one from Samsung.
Ah, that's a good idea. We'll say that Apple's doing a flying car and let Samsung make it because they could make it.
Right. Yes.
I'm sorry.
I'd be happy with just a car.
Andy's raising his hand at this point.
No. I'm sorry. I realized I was talking over Renee and I didn't want to talk over Renee, so I was indicating that yes, I realize I'm.
For people at home, one of the difficulties, because two of our hosts are on Skype, two are in studio, it's always very difficult. I apologize for us talking over each other. I think we do a pretty good job of kind of managing that, but it's sometimes difficult because of the latency.
There is sometimes a CNN crossfire sort of fluey kerflooey. No, I say boogie ga boogie. No, but it's exactly this, but isn't that like, I think about exactly the sort of product that Samsung could not possibly do well, and watch has got to be really close to that, because you can't just throw components together and put a strap on it and say voila, a watch. And sell it. You have to be like Pebble. You have to be like presumably a company like Apple. You have to have, here is exactly what it's going to be used for. Here is a short list of features that we know for a fact we can deliver flawlessly. And that's what we're going to deliver. Samsung is going to be, well, what's this thing on the side of it? Oh, well, that's, if you just put this on the side of a can of cola, you can actually open the top of it. Like it's a can opener. That's right. When it's not being an HD antenna for your local TV set. Really?
But Punter Joe in the chat room actually has the reason why Samsung should do a car, because then we could call it the S car, and you could say, look at that S car go. And the joke would come true.
Do you remember the Moto Active that they put out last, like Motorola put out when there were Apple Watch rumors? I think if this rumor comes out every year, every competitor will have a watch.
And so for those of you tuning in wondering, where's the Mac news? Where is the Mac news? We wonder the same thing, by the way.
Yes.
There is a good story. Apple is now offering iMacs with built-in Visa mounts for $40. Woo!
That's actually really important to me.
It's important to me, too. We bought this iMac thinking it had the high-end had a Visa mount. Doesn't. Because normally I have it on an arm that I can move around. Mm-hmm. So now, what? Because I bought one without, Apple released one with.
Thank you, Leo. Let's all thank Leo. No, this is why we don't. It's actually one of the big reasons we don't buy.
You want Apple. Them to be able to. So the Visa mount allows you to mount it on an arm. It's an industry standard.
Yes.
And you would like that.
Absolutely. I will actually consider.
Actually, with this thin design, it really isn't much bigger than a cinema display, but it's got all the guts of a Mac.
I mean, that's really cool. An iMac is, we have lots of iMacs, both here and in Rwanda, but the.
But with no stand on the wall. Great to be able to put and a wireless keyboard and mouse.
And there's some companies that make custom ones. You know, the monitors in Motion make ones that fit into, you know, that fit with your iMac. But this is great to just be able to buy off the shelf solutions.
I suppose it's the case that this is not retrofittable.
Probably not.
No, of course not.
Exchangeable. But the funny thing is, though, Leo, every time I hear a rumor about a new version of an iMac, analysts put out a story about Apple making a television.
I know. I know. So would you write another one? Would you? Because you don't need any source to say it's a rumor. Just say it's a rumor. I'll start.
Well, no, they just hear rumors. There's Apple-wise components for an iMac, and they just assume it's a television.
Boom. Who has a bet? $100 bet. Gene Munster has a $100 bet. He said there will be an Apple TV by the end of the year. Who said there wouldn't be?
Wasn't someone from Engadget?
Oh, it was or Topolsky. Was it Joshua Topolsky?
Maybe.
Anyway, oh no, it was. It was Tim Stevens. You're right.
Yes,
Tim Stevens. Bet Gene Munster. Tim said no Apple TV this year. Gene said, oh, I think there will be.
If you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by.
That's a long wait for that one.
That's a very Japanese quote for a Canadian.
I like it. I'm waiting for the bodies of my enemies to float by. Wait a long time.
But let's see. I think there's kind of like a zone, a comfort zone you can really sit in for these rumors. That if what you really should do is you should figure out, when do you think an Apple Watch would be released? I think it would be released in October, in time for the holiday season. So if I start boasting my butt off and sort of like make up lies about, I can't talk about what I might have seen when I was in New York the other day when I had a meeting at a hotel suite with somewhere, because I'm not supposed to talk about it. But I think I would not be terribly surprised to see if. And so you got to make sure there's enough distance between you're being so absolutely out there and confident and the time when people are going to be proving you right or wrong, to make sure that by the time that happens, you've made a lie in August or September that's so big they'll forget all about what you were talking about in March.
I did like that Don Knotts impression you just did, though. That was quite good.
Thank you. I'm also working on an Alan Arkin. That's coming along. Alan Arkin's very big this year. No one used to do Alan Arkin, but
all of a sudden,
everybody has one.
The nice thing about Alan Arkin, it turns into Jackie Mason very easily. If you're an Apple TV fan, Apple's Hobby just updated 5.2.1. At least one of the things changed, a new Hulu Plus interface. Okay. And ABC is reportedly working on, and this I find interesting, intriguing even, a live streaming TV app. That would be huge for iOS. Yeah, imagine watching your ABC shows like Modern Family and Once and Grey's Anatomy on your iPad in real time.
Yeah. See, it's a lot of interesting movement. CBS released a major app for iOS. I hope it didn't spoil anybody's pick of the week, but it's germane. That gives you pretty much every show that they had any sort of a right to. The only show that I could not spot inside that app was Big Bang Theory, which is owned by other folks. But between this and all of the other different network shows, I was just working at the coffee shop the other day watching Project Runway, which I missed off the DVR. Off the Lifetime app, and that's when I actually decided to like open up a little Omni Outliner to recreate. Here's everything that I'm recording on my DVR, and there's almost nothing on that list that I can't get through a streaming app on iOS. And most of those I can also AirPlay to my TV via Apple TV. And it's like, man, if I keep saying that before you cut cable, it's not like a one-in-one decision. It's like it's a game you play over the course of a year and a half. And when you get 100 points, you cut the cable. And I think that got me from 93 points to 97 points.
I think, though, that in every case, you're going to have a cable subscription, right? As you do with HBO Go.
I cut mine, Leo. I got rid of my cable. I used just the Canadian apps have been out for a while. There's CTV.
Can you watch live?
City TV. No, there's no live, but I mean, yeah. It's within a day. And it is aggravating because one of the apps you can AirPlay, the other one you can't.
Right.
And the videos go down, but the ads always work. So you'll watch the ad and then I'll say, oh, sorry, we're having video issues.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll try again. The ad will work. The video still works.
By the way, that's just a technical issue. It's just the separate servers. We're not doing that on purpose.
But I sit there and I watch Arrow and I beam it to my Apple TV and it's fantastic.
Wow.
That's the really cool thing is if Aereo, that really great, like absolutely gutsy streaming live network television service that's available right now in New York and it's just expanded into like the Metro New York area and I can get it in Connecticut and New Jersey. They have a really good app that runs on the Roku box. So now every Roku costs 60 bucks.
It was iPad only for a while.
But now it'll work on other things as well. Wow. So if they actually manage to get that going on the Apple TV,
awesome,
like as an app, that I think is certainly gonna sell a lot of Roku boxes. It's gonna sell a lot of Apple TVs. Who knows what's gonna happen once this actually rolls out? They've announced something like 22 new cities, and looks like those are gonna happen by the end of the spring. And I cannot wait to see what kind of effect the service has because I've had press access to that for a couple of weeks. I can only get it for a week at a time when I have a legitimate journalistic reason to have it because it really is very much tied to your local broadcaster because that's what makes it legal.
Dr. Mom brought hers out and I played with it when she was out here and it's Aereo. It's the silliest thing. I think it's kind of kludgy. Barry Diller's company,
but it works.
Little dime-sized antennas. And the reason the courts have said, it's okay, is because you're not getting, it's not like cable service, you're just renting this antenna in this array.
What they're doing is they're recording off the air broadcast using an antenna that only you have.
It's your antenna. That's right.
Right. And so that's the reason why, like, if they offer the service in New York, I have to live in New York and I have to physically be in New York to watch that TV and also to watch my DVR program. So it's there's a narrow bandwidth of legality to here. But I looked into this when I wrote a review of it a couple months ago. The really hysterically funny part of this is that none of this would be legal if not for the fact that Cablevision created a huge, huge lawsuit to establish that it's okay for them to have a remote DVR feature without having to pay the networks or pay the cable stations for rebroadcasting, because that was the judgment that said that if you have a remote DVR feature, it's not technically rebroadcasting because the user is creating at the user's own discretion a recording that is only available to that user, and for that reason it's not rebroadcasting. And that's exactly the argument that Aereo latched on to say, no, we're not rebroadcasting it, we're just simply the user has an antenna, the user is creating a recording at its own discretion, and the user only has access to this, and so therefore Cablevision, sorry you're upset about this, sorry, here let me take you out to lunch, have a triple scotch on me, we're going to be continuing to roll out in 22 more cities after this, thank you.
By the way, we'll be reviewing today on Before You Buy the new Roku 3, which I really, really like. Look forward to new Apple TV. And I don't know how this happens. So this is weird. So remember at the beginning of the show?
Right.
I said one of the things we're going to do on a know-how episode in the future, I'm going to make a Fusion drive on my Mac Pro. I want to get my Mac Pro up to date. And so the best thing I can do is put an SSD in there, maybe make a Fusion drive, maybe do an SSD. But it's a shame because nobody's offering higher-end video cards for the Mac Pro. The best you can get is basically the same card Apple was offering 2.5 years ago. Today, Sapphire launches the during the show.
Your timing is impeccable, Leo.
Sapphire launches a Radeon HD 7950 for the Mac Pro. So in 2 weeks, we're going to do take your Mac Pro to the next level.
And this is going to be part of it.
And this is, I just ordered it on Newegg. It's $479 on Newegg.
But you didn't buy the last one, Leo. You're supposed to buy the last one, and then they announced it.
Yeah.
Well, if you had bought believe it yesterday, me, if you had just the fact that I'm spending $1,000 on this Mac Pro to get it to like anywhere near modern speed guarantees that the announcement will be in about a month.
Yes.
Exactly. Right?
It has to be.
Just telling you. $1,000 for it. By the way, the SSD I'm buying is a PCI Express card, so it's faster even than the SATA bus.
Right.
Yeah.
Leo is a bellwether customer.
Yeah. You just watch what I buy and then wait. Because it'll
also
get
known
better.
As the first penguin off the ice floe.
There's no sharks in it.
Hasn't the water turned a lovely hue, Chase Scarlet?
It's okay, everybody. Come in. There's no shark. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. They've launched Squarespace Commerce. You were talking about this, Alex.
You know, I was talking about the fact that there's a bunch of us talking about building a website about, you know, dealing with some of the issues related to visual effects that are happening right now. And so people were talking about, like, where should we put it and everything else. I was like, oh, let's just put it on Squarespace. I don't know if they're going to agree to that or not, but all I was saying was like, it was just like,
it's so easy. It's kind of a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, I was just like, it's just, why are we doing this? Like, why should we make this any more harder than it has to be?
Right.
You know, just if you're going to build a website, this is the way to get started. You may decide someday that you want, I don't know why, but you may decide some day that you need to more custom, or you have, you know, a bunch of developers that want to do Drupal.
Well, that's
or
the beauty
like
of that.
That.
Squarespace, they have a developer platform with JavaScript.
Exactly.
They have,
and that's the thing to remember is that you're not, like a lot of our websites that are built on Squarespace are not 100% WYSI, you know, they're not just what Squarespace provided. There's custom code that you can inject into what you're doing there. So you're not limited to it. But all the basic stuff can be quickly edited by someone who is not a coder.
Yeah. Really, really exciting. Great. So here's the deal. The best thing to do if you're interested in this at all is to go to squarespace.com and do the try button. It doesn't cost you anything. See as it gets started there. No credit card needed. You just basically launch right into it. Start choosing a template and so forth. I think you'll be very, very excited by what Squarespace offers in terms of its flexibility, its power. It's for things like mobile responsive design mean that one site serves all, whether it's a big display, 27-inch display, or your little iPhone 5. It is incredibly useful for photographers and people who want portfolios. They've got great galleries. I just can go on and on. But the best thing about Squarespace now is try it for 2 weeks. Import all your stuff from the existing platform, by the way. Whatever your, you know, API is, Blogger, TypePad, WordPress. It'll import everything. Comments, pictures, images, all the links are the same and everything. So you can really try it. But then if you decide you want to buy, take a look at the pricing. It's unbelievable. Squarespace is hosting plus software, right? You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. And the price is right. They start at $8 a month when billed annually. For the basic plan, you're going to want to look at the unlimited plan. $16 a month. It could be $20 month to month, but I think the annual plan is a good deal. And that gives you unlimited pages, unlimited galleries and blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You never get a bandwidth bill, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. When you buy an annual plan, they get you the custom domain name of your choice, and then they hook it up for you. And if you want to do commerce, oh my goodness, Squarespace is now making it the easiest way to build a store online for digital or physical goods. Fast merchant accounts set up so you can set up payments right away.
I still don't even know how they do this.
It's so good. Well, they're using
Mass. The fact that they can do a lot of them.
The back end payment system is Stripe.
Stripe.
But I mean, the front end, you
today, your store is open.
You can add colors to products. You can, like, if you have like a shirt that comes in,
you can have all the different colors.
Yeah, oh, you can have neat. All the colors, and that's all on Squarespace. I mean, they've just made it really
Chad's
easy.
Chad's going to open Chad's hair store and pick the color.
You can buy this dye on my hair store.
They do tracking orders, providing customer email updates. They shipping labels, adding coupons. They do the tax calculations, which is amazing. All of this, $24 a month when you buy an annual plan. And they don't take a cut. Stripe takes the usual merchant fees, but they don't. But Squarespace just takes no cut.
And that's competitive.
This is a really incredible thing. Great social media integration. This is your new business. You could be literally in business tomorrow. Today. Go to squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, you don't need any offer code or credit card if you want to try it. But if you decide to buy, use our special code MACBREAK3, because we're in the month of March, the third month of March, is what I call it. MACBREAK3, and you'll get 10% off that first purchase. So that's why an annual plan makes even more sense. I shouldn't have to sell you on this. This is just, you start selling. Squarespace.com. Are you doing a business, Chad? It sounds like you know a lot about this.
No, I looked into it. It
is cool.
And what's funny, I mean, in a previous job, I was a warehouse manager for a company that did online selling, and it was a pain.
Yeah.
We had to practically call another company to add products to our website.
Yeah.
And this is so simple.
Our first one was
so
homegrown.
Simple.
Like, we actually wrote the e-commerce from scratch. It was 12 years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
So we've just slowly progressed to the point where now we're not going to do any of it at all.
Really awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
Really awesome. Time for our picks of the week. Andy Iannocco, let's kick it off with you, sir. I didn't ask you, by the way, Andy, if there was an Audible book you wanted to recommend.
That's okay. I can save that for next week.
Okay.
I've got stuff. I might need to go weird again, but I'm not going to have to worry about that. I'm a big fan of the iPad as like the only really mobile computer that I really, really need. I do so much by writing on it. My favorite keyboard for the iPad remains the Plan Gen Apple wireless keyboard, because I like to have the full size, like full stroke, like Bluetooth keyboard here. But it's a pain in the butt to like carry it around. It doesn't really affect portability. So my eye is really open on every time there's a brand new kind of like iPad sized keyboard out there. I really want to try it out. Logitech has this really cool new ultra thin cover for the iPad, cover keyboard. And this is what your iPad looks like when you have a keyboard attached to it. And it's right inside. There you go.
Like
and
that, you mean?
Your bag. Right. And it looks like sort of a MacBook Air. Exactly. And you open it up. Now, of course, this will flop. This is not like a notebook. But the thing is, you detach it from here. You click it magnetically, click into there.
Isn't that great?
And it becomes a stable, typable thing. And it has the usual drawbacks of an iPad-sized keyboard. The keys are not quite the same size.
It's pretty good,
smaller,
though.
It's a smaller deck. The keys are smaller, too. But they're really good, high-quality mechanical keys. So they feel very comfortable typing. And although I can't type at my usual, you know, nuclear pace on this thing, I can type very, very fast. And if I really did, if size was really a thing that I really was concerned about, this would be a very, very nice a nice alternative. It also has a couple features that I wish that Apple would steal for their own keyboard, which is this really incredibly high-tech thing called a power switch. That if you take this, it's called a switch, has two positions, it's binary. So if you slide from here to here,
amazing.
That means that the Bluetooth keyboard is off, and it's very, very unlikely that you'll be in the middle of a flight, and then you'll hear like music coming from the overhead compartment ahead of you. Because has that ever happened to you?
Yes.
Because there'll be a bump on the flight, something will bump against something inside the keyboard in my bag over there, and we'll start playing music. And because there's no way because they went for that really cool, awesome styling, but no, we're going to have a feather-like touch button on the side of it that will turn it on and off. I want a mechanical button. I wish I didn't have to take the batteries out of it to prevent it from running down my iPad's battery. But this is a $99, really, really cool package. They also, now I don't know how to feel about this one. They also have a version of it for the iPad Mini.
Oh, interesting.
And if you imagine you have to adapt for a keyboard that's small enough for the
That's only as wide as a regular iPad. Imagine how much you have to adapt for a keyboard that is this skinny.
Yeah.
That's kind of – so I don't know how – like I said, I don't know how I feel about it. It's the same sort of thing. We've got a magnetic sort of slate stand. The keys are also are just high-quality, nice quality key switches, mechanical. They're not like just like plastic membrane. I think that I did a couple of tests with it, and I was able to type kind of fast using a few fingers, but not the full thing. So I think it's a nod to how popular the iPad Mini is. So how many people are kind of abandoning their full-sized iPads and deciding everything that I want my iPad to do, I can do with my iPad Mini. So it's sort of a nice compromise between those two. But I'm glad that they take a chance. I'm glad that they don't simply decide that something is ridiculous. I'm glad that Logitech decided to go, let's build it and then show everybody how ridiculous this is. And maybe some people will think it's not ridiculous at all. And that's $79.99 instead of $99.99. Both of these, it's also available. They sent me the white one. You can also, I think it's also available in black. So you can get it to match the color of your device. So cool stuff. Again, it helps you a lot with that transition of asking yourself, why am I taking an entire notebook computer with me when really my iPad can handle almost everything I need? Now there's that added convenience of now it's just a nice slim package on top of everything else and much less hassle than taking two really distinct devices with me.
Methinks Andy's planning more time on the Amtrak.
I don't know why it's taking them so long for me to just give me a year long pass, because I tweet about it, I blog about it, I say nice things about it.
Give him his own car.
Flying car.
Wait, Renee, but why would I want to drive from Boston to New York City when I can spend those three half hours productively in a cushy seat walking to the bar car and back with my own power outlet at the seat so I can run any device I want? And there's cell service, even LTE service, all throughout the Northeast Corridor, one of the most pleasant seaside rail trips. It's all the travel, all the speed, all the comfort without.
Andy, we got you the Burger King Gold Card. What more do you want? Come on!
I can attest that he gave me that speech in the Samsung line when I asked him how he got there.
But my nails are drying.
Free hat,
Renee.
I want to start a conductor's hat and I go. Woo-woo.
Oh, that would be cool. Maybe you get a free hat. That I think we could arrange that.
Thank you.
Anybody who works for Amtrak, could you send Andy a conductor's hat? That's simple. I'm sure we have dozens of people listening.
And a gun permit for safety.
Yeah. And, you know what he'd like is one of those little clicker things that you can stamp the tickets, click, click, click. Then he could walk down the aisles and cancel all the tickets.
Actually, that would be great.
No, actually, it's cool because now they have iPhones in optical reader slots.
Oh.
Now they do so much electronic ticketing.
Oh, fancy.
That it's like. Now, part of the announcement used to be, we are now departing Penn Station. Everyone who boarded here at Penn Station, please have your tickets out and ready to be collected as the conductor makes his way through. Now they add, please, if you have an electronic ticket and you're using an iPhone, please turn the brightness of your screen to maximum as the conductor makes his way through.
Wow.
We're part of the future, man.
Man.
I love Amtrak.
Renee Ritchie. You want a hat too, huh?
I want a hat. I every time I'm in the East Coast, everybody I end up on the Acela, and I just
love somebody it. Just sent me a box of hats. One of our listeners or viewers.
Nice.
Yeah, box like dozens of hats.
They? Just hats. They have any logos on them?
Yeah, I'll show you in a second.
See, the cool thing is because I don't review train rides for a living.
You can do that.
Preventing me ethically from just taking as much swag as I can possibly get from Amtrak.
Yeah, thanks to.
I want to travel once cross country in a sleeper car, or at least here to Chicago and back in a sleeper car, just to find out what that's like.
Thanks to Fred Manny of Bakersfield who sent me,
it's like
a Mad Bomber aviator hat, a flop beanie, a fedora, a tari, a fedora, a couple of Kangals, a country gentleman Belmonte fedora. Ah,
there's a hat with speakers.
Can you bring me the box?
Where's the box? I want to see
these. Billabong Militia X Fit.
The question is, are they big enough for your head?
Oh, yeah. No, I think he knows my size.
Which is as big as they make them.
As big as they make them.
I think our size is similar.
Peter Grimm Sicily fedora. The Pistol Sassafras Sun Hat for Women.
Here it comes.
You can only show the box. You can't show the hats.
Oh, John says I can't show the hats. Let me just show one hat.
Preview a hat.
I'll just preview a hat. I'd be like a hat grab bag. Meanwhile, Renee Ritchie, what's your pick of the week?
I have a quick tip and I have a pick. There was this problem, not a problem, but the MacBook Retina was aggravating me sometimes. I noticed that when I was on Skype here, for example, sometimes it would switch from Do Not Disturb to active. And when I would open it and try to log in, I'd have to wait 10 seconds, sometimes 20 seconds before it would actually give me a prompt. And it turns out that with the new MacBooks, there's a difference between the sleep mode and the low power usage mode. And it would go into that after a few seconds. But Chad Coleman on Twitter sent me this link, and you can actually, there's a command you can do in the terminal, a sudo command that lets you change that. So if you know that you're not going to be, if you don't need maximum power saving, you can adjust that to something far more human, and then you don't have to worry about login delays or Skype suddenly coming to life just because PowerNap is checking all your connections.
That's been driving me crazy. That is a great fix.
Yeah.
I think this goes well with my nascent beard.
It goes well with the shirt. It matches the shirt.
So it goes obviously, well with the Samsung event.
This was intended for Sarah. Most of these hats, all of these hats, I'm sure, for iPad today, where we do a hat of the, you know, an app cap.
No, we're getting a second one.
Well, this second is a girl's hat.
That looks like the costume department for the Scottish version of Gilligan's Island.
Hey, Gilligan! Get your paint back.
Now that's a hat.
Now we're ready to party.
Now that's this. I feel like I should go to the track and make a bet in this hat.
On the TV show Vegas.
For some reason, it reminds me of Uncle Buck.
This is a great hat, actually.
Yeah, one of those little hats.
That's a French Connection hat.
It's a party hat.
It's a Popeye hat. It says knowledge, wisdom, truth in the liner.
It's Superman's hat.
Made in China. Yeah, Popeye, you're right. This is straight out of the French Connection, except for the band, which is kind of checked. For those of you listening at home, you're not missing a thing.
And, Mr. Dress Up.
And now Alex Lindsay with his pick of the week. Not good on you, sir. No, hey, just tilt it forward. You're not gonna work it.
I don't know.
You
how to
pick
wear this
your
hat.
Feet.
All right.
I don't care about what you're doing with that. You pick your feet.
All right. So we've gone through a lot of teleprompting software. So for those of you listening, teleprompting is, of course, the ability to put text on the screen, either below a camera, but oftentimes we have teleprompters that put it right in front of the camera. That way you look like you're talking into it. And we don't use a lot of them here at Twit. But
we don't like teleprompters.
But I use them a lot for a lot of the streams and video stuff that we do. We have, I don't know, 10 or 11 teleprompters at this point. And so we're constantly using them for a lot of these things. And finding the right software is oftentimes a big challenge for us. And a lot of the stuff that's been on the Mac store, so there's a company called AutoCue that makes incredible software, and it's really expensive. It only comes with their teleprompters, and it's really annoying. And we've tried to use many of the teleprompter software for the Mac, and they're all buggy. They don't work very well, and I've threatened to write my own for a long time. I'm like, oh, we're just going to design something that's really built for a Mac. They're not trying to make it for a Mac and PC. It's going to run well. It's going to use all of the libraries that Apple already provides for you to do it well. And no one seemed to do that until this software, and this is called Presentation Prompter. And and I don't know who makes this. It's written, it's Ripeware. And this is available on the Mac store. Now, this is expensive from a Mac app perspective.
How much?
$99.
Yeah, but for a prompter app, that's actually not bad.
It's not bad. And here's the thing. It actually works. So not that I'm bitter about many of the other ones that I've worked with, which will remain unnamed, but they always, you know, we've had them crash. We can't control the playback. We can't control there's just so many things that we've had trouble with in this area. And so far, fingers crossed, knock on wood, this one has been very solid. It's very easy to control the size of the text. It's very easy to, you know, do all the little adjustments that we need to, whether it's flipping it horizontally, vertically, using it as a second display. All of those things are, you know, adding timers, putting a focus arrow in. You know, all of these things are things that they've really gotten all the things right. I mean, there's probably little things that once we start using it more, we'll request. We'll probably send them emails. But right now, we really enjoy using it. And so, if you're looking for that kind of thing, I know that's not not everyone needs a teleprompter. But if you're looking for that kind of thing, this is the best one we found. You know, at that price point and standalone, easy to run on your Mac, that kind of thing. So Presentation Prompter, available on the Mac App Store.
So during the entire show, I've been refreshing Tempo. Any of you guys know about Tempo, the iPhone app?
US only, sadly.
Is it US only?
Yeah.
I really like this idea. So we were talking about Google Now and the idea of having software that's kind of smart and extracting bits and pieces from other parts of your system to give you smart information. And Tempo is one of several. There's another one called Grokker that looked really good, but they're doing an invitation system. And I got an email today. I thought, oh, finally I can show this, because I was like 271,000th in line. And they said, you're in, except that I'm not. 923 in line. But every 15 minutes it goes down by a couple of hundred, and I was hoping that by the end of the show I could show you Tempo. So I guess I won't. It's tempo.ai. I'll show you next week. The idea being it gets information from your email and other things to be smart. For instance, if you've got in your calendar a conference call, it'll dial the phone for you. Things like that. I don't know how you do it on the Apple. And apparently there's a hot teacher involved. But I'm watching the video. I'm not sure exactly what this has to do with the application.
And Dropbox didn't buy them? That's
not- yeah. Oh, hey, we didn't even mention Dropbox bought Mailbox for $100 million just because it had the word box in the name.
Yes, exactly.
Really, that's brilliant. So Mailbox is another great app that did the same thing. This must be the new trend with the waiting list. I did get in on that one. And Mailbox
evidently, there's a certain multiplier to how many people are on the waiting list to what your market value is.
Yeah, maybe. $100 million, right? For Mailbox, which is a great mail app, the IDEA Inbox Zero app. I've showed that before where you swipe to handle the mail. You have four different swipe capabilities, and it's really good. It is a good way to handle mail. I like it. It's probably my favorite mailbox app on the iPhone. I don't know what Dropbox is going to do with it. It doesn't really fit their business.
They said they're going to keep it. I mean, there's some rumors going around that Dropbox wants to be a cloud OS and that they'll need cloud apps to do that.
Oh, interesting. So I swiped this partly the way to archive. All the way to delete, that's to the right. Whoops, I accidentally deleted that. We'll swipe to the left to, this is my favorite thing, to say, hey, I think I'll handle this later today, this evening, tomorrow. So you can set a time. I'm going to look at that email. You swipe all the way to the right to add something to a list, and you can create your own lists. Great app. I don't know if they're still doing a waiting list or not for Mailbox, but it's a great app with a terrible name. You know why? Because go ahead and search for Mailbox in the App Store. Good luck finding it.
But it's interesting that these products are all using server-side infrastructure to try and do a lot of the heavy lifting and sorting for you. And I think that these are just the beginning, because there's a lot of apps that are still in beta that are using very similar plans. And it's interesting because they're offloading a lot of the local drudge robotic work to, you know, quasi-intelligent clouds.
So Alex installed a Tempo.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you're on the Mailbox. Way. That's Mailbox.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You can't quite see it. If you do Mailbox now, did you just do this?
So here's the worst part, is right when it came out, I downloaded it. I didn't realize I had to do something else.
Oh,
when I opened
it.
So I finally went and did that last week, and I moved
349,000 ahead of you, 165,000 people behind you.
Not that I'm bitter.
So Tempo did exactly the same kind of reservation thing.
They were all worried that their servers would go down if everybody hit
that
it.
That makes sense.
At once.
If it's server side, you don't want to kill the server.
So it's like they keep on adding one to the straw to the top and going, okay.
Yeah. Okay. It didn't collapse yet.
Okay.
But you have to give them your Google login and let them. That's the same thing with TripIt and other services. You have to give them your login and trust them with your data. And if you're willing to do that, they'll do magic for you.
I love TripIt. It'll go through my Gmail and find reservations and stuff and adds them automatically, creates itineraries for me. And it's been very helpful. I agree. You have to trust them. That's the issue of it. Rene Ritchie, I trust you. iMore.com. Everybody should be reading it regularly. He is rapidly becoming the source, not only for Apple rumors, but just insightful Apple news. I just love what you're doing with iMore.
Thank you, Leo.
And we're so glad to have you part of Mac Break Weekly.
I love being here. Thank you.
Good. We'll send you a hat.
Oh, awesome.
May not be a conductor's hat. I like this hat. Alex Lindsay, Pixel Core. He is the man if you need anything.
It's hard to take me seriously with this hat on, but
no, you know, I'm starting to like it.
I kind of like it, though. I think I might keep it.
It's got your personality.
It's
a
jazz hat.
It's
kind of nice.
It's a jazz hat.
I kind of like it.
It looks like an early 80s teen comedy.
I know. It's Uncle Buck. It's an Uncle Buck hat.
It's a Popeye. What's great, because you're wearing a black shirt and the hat is black and white checked. It's really kind of fits the...
CTV.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Duber, if we don't get tickets at Oingo Boingo concert, I'm never going to be able to do it with Shelly. See? It just sort of trips naturally off the tongue.
So I may try to do some tweet-ups. We'll see. I'm going to be in
Where are you going to be?
L.A. for a couple days, and then Chicago, and then New York.
Follow Alex Lindsay
next week.
Alexlindsay on Twitter, and you'll know where he is.
Yes, I'm threatening. Just got to figure out my production schedule.
Good. That'd be fun. I know that people would like to see you in your hat.
That's fun. I like that he says it's my hat.
You can have that hat. I'm sure.
Nice.
that the gentleman who sent us these hats, Fred Manny, would be glad.
Fred.
Fred sent me plenty hats. I don't think there's any lack of hattage in this box.
Excellent.
Box of many hats.
John was like, "Oh, I knew it." As soon as they opened the box, Alex was going to steal
the hat.
He's mad
at me. He's mad at me. He said, you can't open these hats. They're for iPad today." Ooh, that's a nice hat.
You got Andy's hat.
That's Andy's hat. It is Andy's hat.
There you go.
There you go.
And I'm growing the sideburns, Andy. I don't know if you noticed. If you go to The Verge, I'm ready to take over. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. And do go look at his 90 seconds on The Verge. Did a nice job there. Tell him to get you a better mic.
It was a lovely, lovely mic, a lovely, lovely camera, and a lovely, lovely
All right, I'll tell him. Thanks for being here, everybody. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday. It's my first show of the week, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live. We love it if you do, but if you can't, don't worry about it. We got on-demand video and audio available after the fact. twit.tv/MBW or wherever, you know, you get your internet broadcasting. You know, all the usual places like iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Now, get back to work. Break time is over.